In the darkness of the future, there is only podcasts. What's up, guys? Today, as promised, and one of the few times I can actually promise something and then linearly deliver it to you, as I said, I'm going to do a Warhammer episode. I'm going to focus on my Space Wolf army, because I just think they're dandy. The sort of faction, the Space Wolves in general, not my army specifically. It has a lot that it needs help with and needs worked on. But I'll get into that. Today's also Valentine's Day, so I might tack on a cute little, like, what's a cute movie with Valentines and romances and stuff, but I think it's way funnier and kind of more palatable if the Valentine's Day episode is about Warhammer. Anyway, so I started playing when I was really young. I was in grade, I want to say like grade 3 or something, and a kid in my like street that we were hanging out with had his brother's like Imperial Armor army, like Astro Militarum. So it was like Imperial Guard, but mostly tanks and stuff. But I guess I'll take a step back. In the off chance that you're listening to this and you don't know what Warhammer is, I'll explain it. It's a tabletop miniatures game wherein you purchase, that's really the first step and the biggest step, build and paint models to assemble an army, and then you play with the army on a felted or like sculpted battle table of your own making or of any kind, and you have a rule book with specific rules for your army, and then you or the other player will have a general rule book and you do battle thusly. It's a lot of fun. It is a practice in patience, in budget management, and in playing with people who just are dicks. The only downside of Warhammer, of course, is you can't play with yourself, so you wind up having to either be fortunate enough to have a group of friends that play it, or like go to these hobby stores, and that used to be something that was quite nice, but the kind of people you encounter, we'll get into that too. So, what set Warhammer apart from what you might be thinking is just like a regular board game or other hobbies is the lore. So the universe and the scripted story and canon of Warhammer, both Warhammer 40K, which is the futuristic sci-fi one, and Warhammer Fantasy, which is the medieval style one. Now that one is called Warhammer Age of Sigmar, and it's undergone some huge transformations, but we'll ramp up to that. There is such a complicated and a massive amount of character backstory for every army, for every unit, for every character, hero, everything, and it's all done well in this sort of general storyline that has a common thread through both the sort of medieval and the 40K futuristic games, and there's tons of ways where they're tied together. And also you have just the nerding out that you want. You know, if you're playing this game and you're buying these armies and you're building this, you want to be as into it as you can. You want to be balls deep and have your lore memorized and know where your army comes from and what the generals are like. And you know, I'm not saying that's for everybody, but the chances are if you're playing the game, you know, you're going to want that. Also, I'm candid with you guys, and I don't edit my audio, so I have to move a table like 2 meters. So just bear with me if this is an ASMR type person listening in. Probably mute the sound. Okay, thanks. All right, that wasn't so bad. Nailed it. Okay. I felt like I was giving you guys inconsistent audio with how much I was moving around, so I wanted to just create a sitting space. Anyway, so Warhammer 40K was my first introduction. As I said, a friend of mine had the human army. The Imperial Guard makes up probably the largest army ever in the universe in anything I can think of, any franchise or... As they say, it's billions of soldiers drafted from millions of worlds. So it's just a huge behemoth of a bureaucratic, kind of dystopian, pseudo-religious zaibatsu, like a giant corporation, like a massive thing. And the Imperium is complicated that way. It's sort of staggeringly huge, and it's collapsing under the weight of its own, like, many conflicts, be they internal and socioeconomic and race-based and corruption-based, and there's let alone the fact that there's, like, a ton of evil aliens I'm going to get to, but... I like the sort of sci-fi stuff, but I'm not going to lie, it wasn't thrilling to me, but he had a unit of... can't believe it. I think they were called Attilan Rough Riders, and they were like, you know, Attila the Hunnian inspired, were they like Tarkatan warriors? So like Huskarl type Cossack units, like horse mounted soldiers who are using horses at a time where sort of the status quo is using automobiles for warfare. So I was fascinated by that. I thought they were super cool. And they were kind of niche and extremely expensive to buy as a whole army. So I'm like, fuck that, but I do want to play with horses and spears and that kind of stuff. And he's like, well, you're in luck. There's actually an entirely separate game that was like started in the 70s that this one's based on that's all medieval stuff. And I'm like, well, fucking, let me say that. So the store Games Workshop, it's named after the company that makes Warhammer, Games Workshop. Now it's, I think, just called Citadel. Citadel was always the name, but I don't think they sort of spun it as a focal name. I think it was like a brand. It took a backseat. But you would go to the Games Workshop store, and there's still a few, but they obviously, you know, because of their business model and, you know, economy stuff, there's way less of them now. But they're great. You can buy the stuff as you would at a store, and obviously there's shelves all along the walls, but in the middle there's tables and paint stations, and if you bring your own stuff, and I can't stress that enough, bring your own stuff, they will give you nothing. They will give you nothing but criticisms. You can sit down for a game, and it was great, because if you went there, not only did you have the advantage of a table that's way better than anything you had at home, but you had people that you can call on for rule clarification, which is something that I crave in home games. Like, I would pay one of those dudes to stand in the corner of, like, the war room when me and friends of mine were playing Warhammer and just, like, it's bullshit, you can't do that. Yes, I can. Like, Gary, can he do that? No. Because, you know, like, even if we could always resolve our issues civilly, except that one time we played Risk, but there was always, you know, it's going to land on one side of the court or another, right? It's going to favor somebody. So the stores were a lot of fun, and I went there at Fairview Mall with my family, and they had the shelves are divided. One half of the store is the fantasy one, the 40k one, and I was like a kid in a candy store. I had never been that excited to be in a store. I was like so overwhelmed by the sheer amount of... I remember one of the first things I picked up, like the battalion box, or like a box set for the lizard men, and like they were blue lizard Aztec inspired warriors, and I'm like, this is fucking crazy. I love everything about this. So I think this was near the holidays, so for Hanukkah, my mom got me and my brother. That was the only way we could do it, is if we both kind of... he was mutually interested. I don't know if... that's actually a good question. I don't know how he became... I think maybe just because I brought it into the house. I think this was one of the few things I had before him. He's a year and a half older than me, so I mean, a lot of stuff he would just get to first, but I think Warhammer... I had a really good friend named Mark, who it was the one that introduced me. He was very into the lore as well. He explained a lot of it. Anyway, we got the Warhammer Fantasy starter set for Hanukkah that year, and it was the Empire, as I mentioned, but in the fantasy setting. So picture typical, you know, English-style, sprawling medieval empire, kingdom of man. Soldiers and knights and lots of heraldry and, you know, some cool types of horses and stuff, but nothing like, nothing crawling out of a nightmare or anything. Like a good normal branch of dudes, cannons and whatnot. And they're fighting against the orcs, and the orcs in fantasy are super Tolkien inspired, like the Uruk-hai. Like, they're just big, brutish. They differ in a couple ways. They're slightly magical, but they're all very, very stupid. So their inability to understand the potential of their magic and how to do it limits what they can do. But when they all get together and they sort of, like, will something to happen, like, it works in the same way in 40K when a bunch of them, like, get on a big rock and they're like, this rock is a spaceship! And, like, they put control sticks and knobs and wheels on it. It, like, their magic kind of makes it so, and it's how a lot of their weapons work. Anyway, I love the orcs because they were really silly. They had a diverse range of units. So you had tiny little ones called snotlings, which were like little rats compared to the size of a cat, and then you had, compared to the size of, you know, the cats were goblins. So you had a variety of goblins. Then you had night goblins, which were like mountain-dwelling, creepy, shifty ones who had red eyes and wore, like, lots of black robes because they were, like, mole-rat-like and preferred the darkness of the underground. And then you had, I think it was, hobgoblins. Yeah, they never really got a lot of light, but they were, like, a sub-race of goblins who were super keen to work with the Chaos Dwarves, who were a sub-race of dwarves. See what I mean? So, orcs never get along. They just, by nature, they're dumb, and they fight a lot, and all they like to do is fight. Like, they enjoy that. They do it for fun. They're hardy, because they're all, like, 8 feet tall and super muscular and kind of immune to pain. And tusks, kind of green, ranges of green. They're called green skins. So, I mean, dark or light, they always want, they're green. They had a rule, that you'd have to do every turn, where if it was your turn in the game to move your pieces or declare attacks or whatever you're going to do, you had to roll a dice, and on a bad roll of like a 1 or a 2, your unit would succumb to infighting and like just be fucking out of commission for the town, for the turn, for the round. The town, it's a combination. And this was hilarious to me because like you, I don't know, even to this day, I think you need to have some variety. You need to have an X factor in something, so that a random sort of, so that it doesn't always wind up being the same thing. And that's for anything. That's not just for Warhammer. That is for anything. And it just means that you need to have a little bit of the uncertain, a little bit of the chaotic in there, because it's such a boon, right? Sometimes you'd roll badly and they wouldn't be usable. And then you have to, there's a subsequent roll you'd have to take of how bad. And if you rolled bad on that, they'd kill each other, and they'd, like, you'd wind up, like, half the unit shanking the other half before the turn starts. But if you rolled well, like, really well, they got combat bonuses. So, I mean, like, I could have rolled nothing and they'd be normal, but I could roll well and they all have, like, 2 additional attacks per person. So, they were crazy. Their magic was equally crazy, like, at big gains, big falls. You know, your wizards could really die easily, but the whole army was silly. I thought it was fun. And because I'm stubborn, I don't like to backtrack, so when I collected the army, let's just say a small army is called a 500-point army, a big army is called a 1,000-point army. Sorry, a medium army is a 1,000, maybe 1,200-point army, and then a big army is 2,000 points or above. So my brother and I hit 2,000 points fairly quickly. I stuck with orcs because I figured I already had the pieces, but my brother immediately jumped to, like, the evil human empire, which is called the Chaos. We'll get into that. Chaos is really big. Chaos is a lot of things in these two games. You have the literal other realms, so the sort of combination of the negative zone, the phantom zone, some sort of hellish underrealm and immaterium. It's just, you have this other dimension called the warp, and in 40K we sort of live alongside it, and certain people can go into it, and vessels can travel through it, and we use that as a way to travel through space and subspace, because you can jump through different points in the warp. But, as it would be, the warp is inhabited by, like, a hell a ton of, like, crazy shit. So not just, like, powerful monsters beyond reckoning, but like literal gods of undoing and the demise of man. So there are 4 Chaos Gods, as they're called. So you have Nurgle, who's like this giant, gross, fat, diseased, but extremely friendly god of decay and disease. And he's like just described as being super jolly and happy, but like the grossest of like lesion covered organ spilling, like open wound weeping zombies and bloated corpses following. He's gross, but he's friendly because he's like, he's eternal and these things happen. Like, he views them as gifts and he thinks he's everyone with diseases is his children. It's just a gross scene. It's a lot of green, a lot of maggots. In the game and in the lore, worship to him makes you immune to pain and disease despite the disfigurations. I mean, like, fighting against them, a lot of defense, a lot of health. Korn is the god of death, blood, and skulls, I guess. Maybe brass and dogs, throw that in there. It's really funny because it's my mother's maiden name, so we always had fun with that. I think the spelling's the same, too. But he's pictured as, like, your typical giant red, leather-winged, goat-hooved, axe-swinging red skin demon. Like a big old... he gonna fight, and everyone's gonna die. He sits in a mountain of skulls. People yell, blood for the blood god, skulls for the skull throne. You just fight in his name. He's really big because the people in the north, just like the sort of barbarian, Russian-y, fringe tribes, north of the wall type dudes, who live above the empire, live just south of the chaos polar gates, which I'll go into. So they're touched by chaos a lot, so they're usually the bread and butter stock of where the chaos gods get their devotees and their troops, and then the various gods, depending on who you worship, will bestow various gifts on you. So as I said, for Nurgle, you'll look like, as I described. For Korn, you'll get maybe like, you'll turn red, you'll get super muscles, you'll have like a weird brass collar, which he's into. Tzeentch, T-Z-E-E-N-C-H, I think, if you're wondering, is the god of magic and change. So my brother actually found this one fascinating. That was his army, and it's formidable, because chaos magic is fucking scary. So in the Warhammer world, all magic derives from the winds of magic, which by origin are technically chaos, but elves are able to use the winds of magic safely, and humans can do so by breaking it down. So like there's 12 lores, like, or maybe not 12, I don't know, there's a bunch of realms, and there's also lores. There's like the lore of Jade, which is life magic, and so if you do that, you can only handle that type of magic. And there's, I think, like Akshi or something, which is fire magic, so you can only handle that part of the wind, whereas elves can, high elves, I mean, can manipulate the full wind of magic at once. But chaos magic is just raw and scary. Each one of the almost said a mistake there. There's three lores, because Korn is anti-magic, like 1,000%. He hates magicians and magic users, as he thinks they're cowards, because he's all about dueling and fighting. So he has no magic. Very hard to cast magic against the armies of Korn. But what you do have is a definite powerhouse in that Tzeentch army for magic. They're twice as good as it. They're twice as good at it as anyone else in game. I mean, that means you get like a lot more dice, a lot more abilities. But chaos is one folly that they had, and sort of the sheer amount of new content introduced has changed that. But back in the day, they didn't have any range, so they're just beasts up close. Chaos armies are powerhouses in the combat stage, but no shooting whatsoever. They abhor it. They think it's cowardly and stuff. So there's no bows, there's no ballistas, trebuchets, onagers, anything like that. They have throwing spears, which is extremely short range for the game, and that was it. So magic and the ability to project, you know, ethereal projectiles and curse people at a distance was a huge boon, and it totally offset their disadvantage, so it became really hard to fight. The Warriors of Chaos, as I mentioned, the northern people, they wind up, like, worshipping these gods, and they give them this spooky armor that fuses to their skin and makes them, like, really strong. And so everyone's wearing that Chaos armor, which in-game is really, really good. It's one of the, probably the best armor you can wear, if not the Dwarven, sort of not Damnation equivalent, called Gromril. Gromril? I don't know. Something that sounds like that. There's dwarf dudes called Ironbreakers who wear it, and they probably can go toe-to-toe with Chaos pretty evenly. Cinch is spooky to me because he's like a giant bird and he has those bird legs that bend the wrong way, and I always found that kind of unsettling. But I love his color scheme. Everything's blue and shifting colors and rainbows, and he's all about like learning and magic, and it's cool. In 40K, all these gods and their armies exist as futuristic contemporaries, so you have a legion called the Death Guard who fell to Nurgle, and obviously their armor and themselves are all... Yeah, I'll get into it, but just understand that these gods sort of exist in that line that straddles the two universes and connects them, and it's one of the common things. Slaanesh is the fourth god. He's the newest and the youngest and the most weird, I think. He's all about pleasure and, like, physical, cerebral, sensual, sexual pleasures and the like. So his followers are always, like, alluring, ambiguous siren-type people with, like, deformities, claws and stuff. I don't know. People, you know, like, political candidates and actors and stuff would worship him, and then they get these gifts, and then they start cults to him, and he comes and collects, and it's a whole big thing. Anyway, that's the four of them. So, Chaos constantly wages a war on the world. So in the fantasy realm, they're always descending from their polar gates, they're corrupting people. Everyone in all corners of the world kind of worship them in cults, because it's religion is very factual in this. Like, if you do certain stuff, you get power. So, I mean, like, it's not... But it damns you, and the Empire hates it, so they'll send witch hunters and stuff to burn you. So it's best not to, but... You have a constant threat of Armageddon and the end of time from the Chaos Forces in fantasy. And then in 40K, you have kind of the same thing, just in a space version. You have one massive entrance between our space, the real space, and the Chaos Realm called the Eye of Terror. And this information, I think, is a little outdated because some stuff's happened in 40K, and I think the planet Cadia blew up, and there's two now, but basically there's one way in and out, and every once in a while somebody, I think his name's Abaddon or Abaddon, he launches these black crusades into the space and tries to, like, wage war. It's just the same way it happens in the fantasy realm. A guy named Archeon, Lord of the End Times, actually fucked up the entire fantasy world pretty bad for when I was playing. Because the four gods are very different, and two of them hate two of them, and, you know, like, the magic guy and the not magic guy don't get along. So they all unite every once in a while in a common purpose, and when they do, they're united, and they bless a dude, and it gets really brutal. So Archeon waged a war by unifying that and a bunch of stuff, and almost brought the Empire to its knees. I think it kind of did, in the end. I'd said that it changed its name from Fantasy to Age of Sigmar, and I'm pretty sure it's because... I'm going to get some of these details wrong, but Archeon's apocalypse attempt was successful and the world kind of blew up and became like this small meteorite of very few survivors, and then, like, Sigmar, who's the sort of progenitor of humans and their hero and god, managed to, like, hold on and ride it through space until he met, like, the king of space dragons, and then with his help, they did, like, a bunch of Zeusian world creating, and I don't know, it gets really weird. They're like forging star metals, and pretty much 95% of what you knew in Warhammer Fantasy up to that point gets wiped out and destroyed, and the 5% that everyone was super keen on to condense it was, like, quote, transported to this new realm. So I don't know, if you knew a god or a demigod or a cool spell, you got off the burning rock, and now you live in one of, like, 12 heaven or elemental themed realms. But yeah, those realms are under siege by chaos. Everything's under siege by chaos all the time. It's pretty much the constant is warfare, as they like to say. I'm gonna keep it on 40K just for consistency for a little bit, but I will finish explaining fantasy, I think. Sorry, I'm having some water. The army that I play is called Space Wolves. In the language of the Space Wolves, it's actually called the Volca Fenrica, which I thought was super cool and hella nerdy to learn, but I can't unsay it now, because it seems like when you find out the real name for foe is Fa, and you're like, every time you say it, kind of make that conscious choice to pronounce it wrong because you don't want to sound stupid or weird. But the Space Wolves are Space Marines, so I should give a preface to that. The Adeptus Astartes, or the Space Marines, were the super soldiers who pretty much brought peace, and then ruin, and then peace again to the galaxy. The Emperor, who in fantasy was just called Sigmar, so I think Sigmar Heldenhammer his name was, he was just a guy who united all the human tribes, and he kind of fleshed out an empire and then disappeared, and now he came back as that space meteorite-riding dude who works with the Star Dragon as a god. But in 40K, they suppose that he was an immortal the entire time, and he's lived and seen the entire existence of mankind on Earth, which they call Terra. And after so many years, he proclaimed himself to be, I don't know, some sort of god, or he didn't want to be called that, but I don't know what else it would be. And then he did the same thing of building up like a giant empire and ruling it and stuff. He's benevolent. He's always sort of had humanity at heart, and his best interests have pretty much been his goals. But in trying to win the countless wars against, like I said, chaos and other stuff, he needed a super army, so he made these, like, genetic super soldiers, you call them, called Thunder Warriors, which were the forerunners to Space Marines. But they were, like, genetically unstable and kind of went crazy and had, like, bloodthirst rage and stuff. So, by using some of his own genetic material, the Emperor created 20 sons, who are called the Primarchs, who would be the fathers and captains and leaders of their respective Space Marine chapters and generals in the war. So each one, and then each further Space Marine, has a number of biological advancements and enhancements. So, like, they have two hearts, for example, to pump all the blood that they need because they're, like, 8.5 to 9 feet tall. They can actually spit acid if they want to. They can, like, breathe underwater, filter out toxins, zoom and enhance eyes. They have a lot of stuff that they can do. There's no shortage. Depending on the canon, the lore, the army, some of them are, like, immune to fire. It's a whole big thing. Each one is very different, because when these 20 super babies were cloned and created in a lab, the evil forces of, say with me now, chaos, conspired against them and separated them somehow magically and spread them to, like, the corners of the galaxy. So I will definitely do an episode that just covers at great length all of these, but I'm sure that you'd rather read it, so I definitely would check out a wiki or two. But each Primarch had a unique origin and upbringing, and the Primarch of the Space Wolves, I want to say he's the 6th Primarch, but it's been a while. The Primarch named Leman Russ, who would become the Space Wolf leader, landed on a planet called Fenris. So you'll see the trend here, but Fenris is an icy classified death world, which means it's just harsh and there's really nothing there that won't try and kill you. And there's life form there. There's, like, massive wolves and krakens in the ocean and, like, fucked up stuff like doppelgangrels or something. I don't know. It's like skin-taking shapeshifter kind of monsters. Anyway, it's an unpleasant place. And the people that it breeds are tough, hardy, and Viking-like. And so that's kind of been the theme with the Space Wolves. You have a bunch of Space Marines. I mean, it's sort of a, like, picturable sci-fi trope at this point. But they're tough as nails, and they're bedecked in fur with, like, glowing axes. They often ride giant wolves into battle, and they're fierce, but they're also loyal. They are unquestioning in their loyalty, and they've performed in duties and missions that have been sort of impossible to achieve by anyone other than them. When I started playing, again, I did the dip into fantasy for a long time to start, but a lot of my friends were playing 40K, and with Warhammer, you know, you gotta go where the water is. So in order to play, I picked up a few pieces to start of just some generic Space Marine stuff, but I was kind of looking through, and back then there was not much content out specifically for Space Wolves. They had this really flimsy codex, and not really any of their own units, but I made a little squad. I painted them like it. And a friend had actually given me, a very long time ago, a tank of his as like a birthday present, just as a model. And I didn't have any units, let alone any Imperial Guards, so I couldn't use it. But turns out, Space Wolves get to use the Limanross tank, which is the standard battle tank for the Imperial Army, named after their Primarch, just as an honoration. But I get to use it. So I picked the army that I already had a tank that could use. But also I like the theme. I like Vikings, and back then they had like a lot of Scottish stuff going on too. A lot of like clan challenges and that kind of stuff, divisions. I stuck with them, and I didn't want to spend a ton of money because I was playing fantasy, so I bought a lot of my parts secondhand from like people on like Craigslist and my friends who were like switching up armies. So eventually I had like this whole collection of, you know, it looked like the tryouts for Suicide Squad, or I was going to say the tryouts for Death Watch, but that's a 40K reference. I don't think people, it doesn't matter. Yeah, you get it or you don't. It just seemed like a UN of different armies coming together in terms of paint colors and schemes and everything. And some of them I stripped, but most of them I just covered up, really thin black primer layer, and then got started with it. But I love that about my army. I said at the beginning it has some things it needs worked on. Most of them are unpainted. Like I put on, I primed them and then put a dry coat of like Space Wolf gray and some yellow on them because that's the primary colors. So you can tell what they are, but they definitely need a more loving paint job. But what I love about my army is it's every single one of the models is converted. Converted meaning like I've added weapons, props, parts, limbs, changed positions, sculpted things on with modeling putty. It's called green stuff if you're Warhammering. All of them are unique, and they all conform to this idea that Space Wolves are unshaking their ability to perform the job, but they're unique in how they do it, and most of them have crazy melee weapons, and I fucking love it. I love those guys. You had all the Primarchs grow up, meet with the Emperor as he visited their respective planets, and take control of their legion. And when Limanross took control of the Space Wolves, he just set the tone of a bunch of warriors who seek glory but are also out to help. And what I like about the Space Wolves is there's a consistent legacy of helping the Imperium, like helping planets not for their own gain and not for like a blind, like, oh, we do it for the Emperor, we'll kill everybody, and not for, we're trying to get back people that betrayed us, Dark Angels. It's just a genuine, you know, saga of heroes. There's countless it's called the Battle of Armageddon, I think it's like the third one. Maybe the first one. I don't know. The Space Wolves were holding, like, an impenetrable line against the horrors of chaos. Surprise. And they roused a bunch of civilian defenses to help them. They win the battle. And then the Inquisition, which is the witch hunters in fantasy, I said, exist 1,000%, but worse, in 40K, were like, okay, all these people kind of saw some stuff we don't want them to have seen. Let's just kill them all, mind bleach them. And then the Space Wolves were like, nope, that's dumb. You're not doing that. But nobody stands up to the Inquisition because they work for the government. Nobody. So it's like a first. So there was a fight. Obviously, Space Wolves don't lose at anything, so they kick their ass. And then since then, they don't get along with the Inquisition, which is like one of the most foreboding branches of the actual government. So they're, you know, the rebels that way, man. During the what's called Horus Heresy, one of the sons, the favored son, Horus Lupercal, I think his name is, who became a War Master, betrayed his father, the Emperor, and led a rebellion of, I guess, half of his brothers. Maybe not exactly half. But they turned to I'm going to pause for dramatic effect here. They turned to chaos. And yeah, it was like this whole big thing. At the height of this war that was supposed to unite mankind and expunge evil and everything, they just excuse me, they biffed it so close. Horus and about sorry guys, water. Horus and I think like five maybe other Primarchs actually convert to chaos. So So you have these superhuman space marine dudes becoming demon princes, which is the term for when you kind of are blessed with the unnatural abilities and gifts of one of the gods. So you have, like, the Nurgle one, as I said. Tsinch one is the one that always gets me, though. Because... excuse me. Because that one was specific to the Space Wolves. So, as I mentioned, they're loyal, man. They're like the loyal right hand of the Emperor. So, when the Thousand Suns chapter, led by Magnus the Red, the Cyclops, as we call him, when he was accused of dabbling in the warp, which 1,000% he did, like, that wasn't the question, it was obvious that he had to be put down. And the Emperor specifically approached Leman Russ and told him what was going on. And it got done. The Space Wolf set out, and there's, like, in the codexes, I have about three of them now, there's great stories, but there's really no better story and no heavier story than when they all board the great wolf fleet and they head out to Prospero, which was the homeworld of the Thousand Suns. And I have a couple books, like novels specifically on it, but there was a crazy battle, and the Space Wolves fought brothers in this big, like, fancy glass city of Skullards called, I think, Titska or something? It's, I don't know. It's supposed to be really pretty. It's sorcerers and magics and shit, but it's also evil and corrupt and opulent. And, the Space Wolves have magic. It's very, like, elemental, winter, kind of Viking-y tribal magic, and they're not trustful of, like, loopy, colorful other magics that they have. So after, like, a sundering of the planet, Space Wolves win. Magnus is close to death, but he manages to, like, escape using his bitch magics and run into the warp, transport his whole city and all of his people in there. But in exchange, as with evil chaos shit to begin with, they got fucked over, and all the dudes that didn't have, like, super strong magical connections in his army were, like, turned to dust and now, like, live inside their armor, like, soulless husks. So, I mean, kind of lose the moral high ground when you're looking back at it with all that information. But anyway, sorry, Patrick. I feel like you have probably a certain amount of bias with your army, but I don't see a lot of fault with them. I mean, you can say a lot of things about the Space Wolves, but they've consistently delivered and held back extinction from mankind, and don't I just love them for it? I don't know, for some reason as I get older I have a harder time playing, like, the evil armies, and I read, like, the Dark Eldar, who are, like, space elves, but they're, like, fueled by torture and blood and, like, raiding and raping of innocent people, and it's like, who the fuck wants to sit down and play that army and, like, pretend to, I've won this battle, your planet's slaves while their eyes cut out, like, super fun. Space Wolves have the best heroes, in my opinion, and just like you have with characters like Thor, and you have characters in the game that are supposed to be larger-than-life myths, and I mentioned Thor just because we specifically have a dude who throws a hammer that comes back to him, but Logan Grimnar, who's the current head of the, you know, is a chapter master, so he's the head of the chapter, but for Space Wolves we call it a great wolf, like, head of all the other wolves of the 13 companies. He's a beast, and what's more is he's been a character that's been in it in all the Codex's rulebooks that I mentioned, and I've had him since then. So my favorite part is, as heroes will do, Logan Grimnar believes that a small, focused group of people in the right spot at the right time can win the whole war. So you can take a very customized army, you can take a very small but dedicated, well-equipped army, and I always found that way more fun. So having a small role-play, almost styled army and goal set was a lot more fun than in fantasy, where I'm bringing, like, 100 models to a game and putting them in a regiment and moving the regiment, and now I had, like, oh, a guy, a one-man unit who can sprint across the table, and yeah, it was just a lot of fun. Warhammer games have a certain drawback in that you have to not only bring your own pieces, but there's a setup time. So there's putting all, like, taking all your stuff out of the cases, lining them up just so you know what's going on, and then putting them in their formations, and then, like, for the sake of the game. Then as they start to lose or get, you know, obviously you have to move them, but as they start dying, you have to put your discarded somewhere and on the table just so you pack them up later. It's a long time, man. Even for a short game, it takes a couple hours. If you have the luxury of having a table in the house or a game station with your friends where you can, like, store your pieces, that's a huge boon. But I remember hauling, like, a game case to the store, even doing that now for old time's sake. Yeah, definitely is, it takes a little bit of the fun out of it. I found Space Wolves repeatedly to be the most satisfying to play. In 40K, I never really had another army. I had the, as the rules lack, I don't know, as the rules became more accommodating to you not just sticking to your lane and your army and diverting a bit to, like, allied soldiers, I incorporated some Imperial Guard stuff and some characters and things, but at the end of the day, Space Wolves, man. Space Marines, which are the coolest, the best of the best, they'd say. And it's the fiercest, most bestest one. I mean, they're indomitable. They're eternal. They've been there since the beginning, the creation of all this. They've never lost a fight, realistically. They're heroes outright. I don't know. I wouldn't even say I'd recommend them, because I wouldn't even want to, like... It's not fun to play against your own army. I mean, it's a challenge. I've done it before. It's very interesting to see how different people interpret it. I, for example, like to use a lot of what are called Thunderwolf Cavalry, which are the dudes who ride the wolves, and a smattering of some other things that are kind of unique. And I played against somebody who had a similar... A completely different... What they were doing, but a similar, extremely unique niche way to play it, and it was fascinating. But every person will love something about their army, or love that army for whatever reason it is, and it's fantastic. There's nothing better. It's not like, I'm a Mac, I'm a PC, well, you're wrong, you're right. It's, that's awesome. You like Eldar because the Harlequins are fun, and they flit around and teleport, and they shoot, like, silly string into your bones. Like, whatever you like about an army, you do you. So, yeah. For fantasy, though, it got a lot more diversified. I played... After the orcs, I wanted to try... For some reason, I just wanted to try, like, a hardy, like, solid good guys army. So I chose the dwarves, and I got about 750 points. So that should tell you. A little under a medium-sized army. And they were a lot of fun. Stout, again, extremely Scottish. Warriors. Axes, honor up the wazoo. And an unbreakable line of armor. Again, the Gromril armor that they stack on, plus shields and stuff. A Dwarven line is extremely hard to break. I don't think I've ever seen a defense as good as when I can line my dwarves up in a way that crossbows and black powder weapons are going to whittle you down before you make it to that shield line, and that shield line is hardy. Problem is, I don't always like playing defensively. Sometimes offensive, and I don't mean to be rude, but they got them little legs. They can't really run that fast. So in-game, your pursuit options are very limited. And yes, they have units to overcome that. They actually have, like, gyrocopters and people who can rappel and stuff. It just... The ability for every person to move a certain distance is imperative, and I just found it a bit lacking. So from there, I went the complete other way, and I went with Wood Elves, who are these nimble, lithe archer characters... who have, like, this, I would say unnatural, supernatural attachment to this forest they live in called Athalorian. And it's a really fun army. I had a 500-point, small little one. And this was way before they even had, like, their own designated Codex rulebook and units. All their units were sold in, like, little blister packs of three. So, like, for example, when you buy a unit, you buy it in a box. It's like a box of 10 or 5. This one, if it was a box of 5, you'd have to buy all 5 in separate packs, and it's just, it was way beforehand. But in doing that, they were super good, because the few rules they had were general and made them very unfair. So these people could, like, hide in a forest and shoot out of it without penalties, or move through a forest, and for every other unit, A, you can't shoot through a forest, B, moving through a forest takes, like, half your turn and can sometimes kill some of your units. Crazy good. I've never had as much fun as their 30-inch longbow range, which was incredible. I don't remember exactly, but the highest other missile weapons I could think of were, on average, 24 inches, short range was 12 inches. Siege weapons were, like, crazy, but 30 was great. You were outpacing and outranging everybody, so that was a lot of fun. And that was my first experience with skirmishing, because they had a unit called War Dancers, and they would put them on, like, I think square bases still, but they would have a formation of skirmishers within 2 inches of each other, and that made me kind of think, oh, 40K. Remember kind of realizing the disadvantage of that, though, because when you have guns, it makes a lot more sense, because you can spread people out and take cover and everything. When you have swords and everyone's, like, 2 inches apart, you have people in the back, not really in the same fighting group as they're fighting in the front. Anyway, I liked them, and I felt like, back then you couldn't mix armies, but I felt like I had kind of dabbled in everything I wanted, and I'd still kind of gone back every once in a while and added stuff to my orcs, but I felt I had, you know, my elves, dwarves, orcs. My brother and I were kind of sharing the Empire army, the humans, because he stopped using them, and I had at one point picked up a cannon or something for it, so we had like a little army there. But he went off in the weirdest shit, man. Chaos, like I said, and his Chaos army was scary, because it was like a ton of points. He had like a dragon with two heads. And even if you're bad at the game, which I'm sure we were, Chaos is really easy to play and really hard to fight against. So that was a tough one. But he went into Chaos Dwarves, which was, as a, you know, in the lore, dwarves fucking hate Chaos Dwarves, but a long time ago, it's no surprise to anyone, the dwarves lived in all the different mountains and everything, and it was the subset of dwarves that, like, went to the shitty part of mountains and refused to leave, and eventually, like, were on the verge of extinction when, instead of worshipping the traditional dwarven gods, they worshipped this evil chaos bull named Hashut, like, this god of darkness or something, and they became, like, evil. They look all, like, Syrian and, like, dark-skinned and swarthy, and they have curly hair and tusks and stuff, but versus the very, like, Tolkien other dwarves. But weird. They had all these, like, bull-headed minotaurs and centaurs and fuck. Bull-headed minotaurs. I think all minotaurs are bull-headed. I think I meant bull-headed centaurs. But that doesn't really explain it. It's like this Persian, Assyrian mythological monster that's like a bull with wings and a man's bearded head. I don't, you know, my mythology's lacking right now. It's like 7 in the morning, but it was those. And a weird army, but fun to fight against. Warhammer Fantasy, though. Everything I said about the time constraints and disadvantages goes double. Like, for my orc army, 2,000 points would probably take half an hour to set up, to be honest. There's just, because orcs and some armies are very quantity over quality, and you just overwhelm the enemy with lots of little jabs. To put that on the table is really annoying. And I think that was universally acknowledged, and I think that's why 40K in the end sort of was the long runner. Fantasy's older, but it's never had the size of following that 40K had for some reason. Yeah. There's a lot of cool races in Fantasy, that I will say. Since Age of Sigmar, everything's been divided into 4 orders, so they're like the Alliance of, alliances. This is the Alliance of Order, the Alliance of Destruction, the Alliance of Death, and the Alliance of Chaos, I think. So again, Chaos, just being Chaos, evil. Then you have, like, orcs and, like, ogres and people that are just fighty, but not necessarily for a reason, just generally fighty. Just want to watch the world burn kind of dudes. And then you have the undead, like the zombies and vampire counts and the minions of Nagash, the necromancer, and all that kind of undead stuff. And then you have, which I don't necessarily agree with, but I guess 4 is an easy number, you have everybody else. So it's supposed to be the good guys, but it's like the good guys, and then the good guys-ish, and then the ones that can kind of be construed as good guys, and then the ones that are like, why are you there, dark elves? Why are you there, people that have snake bodies for torsos? Anyway, you should check it out. Go to gamesworkshop.com, I guess, but no matter what country you're in, I'm sure they have a website. Their stuff is not as expensive as it used to be, believe it or not, because A, you need less of it, and B, everything's made of cheaper plastics now. It used to be like pewter and resin, and plastic ones were it's somehow, I don't know if I'm crazy or when I was younger I didn't understand money, which is probably also a thing, because, you know, when you're an adult, like $20 is an adult $1. So I really enjoy that expression, but you should check it out. To get a couple guys for an Age of Sigmar game, like a couple people for a unit, very cheap. And actually, they have a starter set called Storm Strike, I think, for like $50, and that's both sides. That's crazy, with rule books and everything. Starter sets used to be like $130, and they were not... Anyway, they're probably bigger. They were bigger. Still, you should check it out if you like the fantasy aspect. If you like the 40K, the sci-fi, the guns and lasers and stuff, check that out too. Not as expensive in the sense that your army can consist of much fewer people and can be much more unique, but probably more expensive because all the worthwhile stuff that you want to bring in, and beefy dudes and tanks and Bane Blade heavy weaponry, all winds up kind of costing a lot. And if you're against someone who has it and you don't, there's not really a lot of ways around it. It is one of those games, a little similar to Magic, that my brother had this like $80 Chaos Hero Archeon that I mentioned. It's like a one-man army. And at the time, I didn't have like a strong like character lord. I just had a random like orc war boss cut through like paper. Like the whole army, not even... Some characters just brutal. And if you don't have like another powerhouse to throw against them, you just stop Schitt's Creek. There's no, hey, you can't put that guy on the table. Like, why? Yeah. Warhammer's fun. You'll get into arguments, so I hope you have friends who take it not so seriously, because I didn't always have that. I had some friends that, by that I mean a friend who would rage out and like stomp his feet and hands, literally though, and like wind up smashing his pieces. But also some really fun times where it's like super chill and you can spend the entire day playing a marathon of games and get into it. So find your space, guys. Do that. Warhammer. It's not going anywhere. I mean, just check it out. Check out the website. There's like 3 wikis I think Fandom has, which, I don't know. Fandom wikis always seem like the cheapest, easiest, like someone whipped this up overnight with the most minimal amount of information, but it covers it. And then you have, I think, Lexicanium or Lexiconum. I don't know. Warhammer's complicated. You'll read into it. Or you won't. I don't know. I don't really get money either way, so I don't have a stake in this. I will, as promised, for the people who romance and such, talk Valentine's Day. My wife's like 6 months pregnant right now, so you know, what we do for Valentine's Day is probably not what it was what we did last year and such. She's doing good, though. But for Valentine's Day, you know, got her the, you know, the nice stuff. The card, the chocolates, a specific kind of maternity cloth that will make her comfortable. That's like more of a compassionate Valentine's gift than a let's smush now kind of gift. I don't personally believe in Valentine's Day. I mean, growing up, my mom always took it really seriously, which I think was adorable, that you can, I don't know, I guess if I have a daughter, I would give her a Valentine's Day card when she's young and stuff, but I think it's made up, and I think it's kind of just a, you know, weird, thinly veiled sexual infused holiday that's just there to kind of make people buy stuff and set this obligation, and that's what I don't like. I will happily buy my wife a present any day of the week, but I hate when there's the expectation to. So, you know, I think wives or husbands are a lot more deserving to come home and like, oh, I bought you this surprise present because I love you, than like, oh, it's April 14th, I'm getting something. Like, it's not the same thing. Not at all. So, I was trying to, at the beginning of the episode, think, fuck, if I say a romantic thing, I have to think of a movie. And I was thinking, what is the favorite rom-com of mine? And I'm in no way going to lock myself into saying this is my all-time favorite. But it's weird that when I said, what is my favorite rom-com, the first thing that did come to mind is Made in Manhattan, which is that Jennifer Lopez movie, which I don't know why that's the first one, but it literally always used to be on TBS, their Atlanta, Georgia network that we get in Toronto for movies, like every fucking weekend. And obviously J-Lo was really pretty. I don't mean was like she isn't, any, I haven't seen what she looks like, but I remember back in the day, I mean, that's reason enough to watch it. But it's cute, she's got like a kid, and then, you know, he teaches a nice lesson to the kid. It's about like hardworking, I don't want to say lower class, but like hardworking Americans, maybe, you know, Mexican American. I don't know, man. It was a good movie. It's a cute feel-good movie. I'll do one on the fly, I guess. Favorite actual romance in a movie. That's a real tough one. I'll list off a few, I think, that just come to mind. I think recently, rewatching Solo and seeing Lando and, I forget the social justice warrior robot's name, but that's hilarious. I mean, yeah, I get it, he's fucking a robot, and that's not ideal, but she says it works, and I mean, it's super funny. They clearly, like, take care of each other. Best romance, 1,000% will always be Up, and it will definitely make me cry if I linger on it, but you sort of are indulged more in the tragedy of their life than the sort of wonder of their... Like, if it was the whole movie was about that relationship and they died at the end, yes, but I mean, it's, the death is sort of a launching point, but still, soup sad. I don't know. My problem is always, I'm very critical with movies, and I love movies, and when I watch a rom-com, I'm usually feeling like I'm watching a movie that's just, you know, not trying, just selling out, pandering to the lowest common denominator, and just being a, you know, saccharine romantic mush movie. Or it's like a Ryan Gosling wish fulfillment fest, and like it's just about like Joe's super boyfriend who like flies them both to Italy to take a Vespa around and find out that his family owns it. I don't know. You know what I mean? But I will say, Crazy Rich Asians, pretty standard formula and really enjoyable. That'll probably be one that makes my top five of what I would say. If you want to watch a nice, cute, romantic movie, it's about a relationship with, like, real dialogue, and yet there's interesting things happen. Interesting things happen. Crazy Rich Asians, yeah. It's a good movie. That's probably about it for today, I think. It's been a long one today. It feels like with Warhammer, you're just barely getting into it. It's a whole cat and caboodle to go into. I guess kit and caboodle doesn't really work in some accents, but yeah, there's so much more I could say. I'm thinking back, like, did I cover it all? And, like, you guys have to understand, when all those Star Wars movies came out and everyone was upset because it tread over the extended universe world that the novellas and stuff had fleshed out, that's probably, I don't want to say more because that sounds competitive, but it's got to be the same amount of lore and world building that's happened to Warhammer. And I mean, that's just massive. Boggles the mind. Absolutely stunning how much they've done. Different writers, different content. You learn everything you need to know. Don't even know the reason why you wouldn't have done it. I don't even know at all. But whatever you're into, guys, check it out. What makes me laugh is that there's now like a kids one, and it's like Warhammer Adventures or something, and it pictures like kids in the front, like child versions of like a Mechanicus Tech Priest and like a Imperial Psyker, and it's like nothing about 40k is or should be kid appropriate, but alright, let's see where this goes. I have rambled on far too long today, guys, but once again, thank you for listening. They've been a lot more ASMR-y lately. I kind of mentioned that last time, and I don't mind. I think I've been told naturally, just I get that kind of voice going on, that it's puts people in a lull, which I guess is not really a compliment. I should stop taking it so complimentary, because it's pretty much being told that you are the human equivalent of an indica bowl. But the ASMR-ish videos are a nicer pace, and it's a chance to just unwind and talk about some stuff, so I appreciate that you guys are listening in. I haven't been making content with Dave in a little while, the Boobies and Suits stuff, just because I think we're just because the weather and stuff, we had done a filming opportunity, but also we're just trying to figure out some stuff with if we're doing video versus podcast or whatever's going on with that. But it's good stuff. I'm sure it'll be back soon, but I will always be here doing my thing. I guess it's roughly every week. I mean, I try to put them out one. But again, if you're a frequent listener, you know I'm kind of unreliable that way. But you guys are awesome, and thanks again for listening. See ya.